ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Sundarbha, which came out just recently. In fact, we may be the first ones as a group to read it all the way through. The editors have. Do you need something for your back? How about this? Okay. This is translated by Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, and he's also written a commentary, which is extremely helpful because the text itself is a little bit tight, terse, and we've been going through it probably about 15 verses at a session, and then stopping at intervals for discussion. And so far, Jiva Goswami has established that the best kind of evidence is to get a report from a reliable witness. It's the best kind of evidence. Someone who's seen it for themselves and can tell. A reliable source telling you what's the truth. And he also talked about how other kinds of evidence that we get through our senses and our mental speculation are inaccurate. And then he talked about how the Vedas are a purusheya. They're beyond human defect. And then he established that the itihasas and the puranas complete the Vedas. He gives Shastric evidence for this. And he also establishes that the itihasas and puranas, itihasas are stories like the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. And then there are 18 puranas, six in the mode of, or six meant for people who are, that cater to people in the mode of ignorance, six that cater to people in the mode of passion, six for those in the mode of goodness. And he gave an example of a golden bangle with a little gap in it, and how the filler for that gap has to also be gold in order to complete it. So he shows how the itihasas and puranas are the same quality as the Vedas. And then he goes a step further and shows how the itihasas and puranas are more important than the Vedas. The smriti is more important than the shruti, especially in this age, because people can't comprehend the Vedic sounds. And there are not proper circumstances under which people can learn them. But they do have access to the itihasas and puranas. And then he establishes how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best of all the puranas, and that it's glorified even by other puranas, and that it is the topmost of all literatures. And in this way, he establishes what he's going to do in the rest of the Sundarbhas, which is to present evidence from the Srimad Bhagavatam and present what the Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing towards, which is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there are lots of other interesting details. That's just a really bare-bones summary. Do you want to add anything?
I think that summed it up.
Anything from the summary that we heard that you heard in the last couple of days that you wanted to mention?
Ramana is the source of valid knowledge.
Valid source.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah, praman is an important concept to have a source for a valid knowledge, valid source of knowledge. And prameya?
Object of pramana.
The object of pramana. We also found out that there are vyas is a post. Being Vyasadeva is a post. But in this particular age, our Vyasadeva is a direct incarnation of Narayan, according to Jiva Goswami. So that's a pretty powerful circumstances. So we are on text number 31. If we choose the alternative reading, Purvam. Now, some of the texts that we're reading sound a little bit technical, but then when we get to Gopi Puranadana Prabhu's commentary, it's like an oasis, because then he unpacks everything. So don't worry when you start hearing this, because it may seem a little bit technical. If we choose the alternative reading, Purvam, instead of Purnam in Bhagavatam 2.3.10, the word still refers to the same Supreme Lord as shown by the specific usage of Shruti, scripture, in the passage, I alone was present in the beginning, Purvam. This is why the Purusha is called Purusha. When it is said that Sri Veda Vyas saw the Lord, it is understood that he saw the Lord along with his internal energy. Just as when we say that someone saw the full moon, when we say that someone saw the full moon, we understand that the person saw the moon along with its effulgence. Text 31.2. Therefore it is said, you are the original personality of Godhead who expand yourself all over the creations and are transcendental to material nature. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. And so the words, along with his external energy, which was under his subordinate shelter, mayam cha tut apashrayam, imply that under his shelter, maya has an inferior role. Since she runs away from him, keeping herself at a distance, she is not his internal energy. This is stated later in the Bhagavatam. Maya, feeling ashamed, flees the Lord's direct presence. Commentary. So all the text I was just reading was by Jiva Goswami, and now the commentary is by Gopi Puranadana. Although Sutta Goswami, in the beginning of his description of Vyasadeva's trance, does not mention the Supreme Lord's internal energy, we should assume that she was also present. The prayer beginning, you are the original personality of Godhead, which was spoken by Arjuna, supports this assumption by saying that the Supreme Lord shows no interest in his external energy but always consorts with his internal energy. Sutta also mentions the inferior position of the material energy. Do you want to make a comment?
About the inferior position of material energy? Well, no, it's interesting that the internal potency is included with that, you know, Radharani is not mentioned so much in the writings, but we know that she's always there with Krishna.
Mm-hmm. There's water behind you. You can distribute that just in case anybody needs water. Yes.
But the external energy being
who stays outside? Yeah. Text 31.3. The internal energy of the Lord is revealed later in the passage describing Vyasadeva's trance. In the verse, the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. And this one, all different varieties of Atmaramas. From the first of these texts, we understand that the influence of devotional service is a function of the Lord's internal energy because devotional service overcomes the power of illusion. In the second, the qualities of the Lord prove themselves the highest functions of his internal energy because they are superior even to the bliss of Brahman. The Purusha and Brahman are not separately mentioned in the description of Srila Vyasadeva's trance because both are included in the personality of Godhead. The Purusha and Brahman are not separately mentioned in the description of Srila Vyasadeva's trance because both are included in the personality of Godhead.
Purusha means Brahman.
Purusha means the personality of Godhead.
No, but it is said that they're included in Supreme.
Yeah, as in, like, Paramatma. Vedanti Tattva Vidas, Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. The Purusha, as the predominator of Maya, is a partial appearance of the Supreme Lord, whereas Brahman is the manifestation of his formless, impersonal aspect. The second and third Sandarbhas fully elucidate this point. Thus we have here ascertained, as before, in text 29.3, the tattva to which this Sandarbha is connected. Commentary. Srila Jiva Goswami was aware that in some manuscripts of Srimad Bhagavatam, text 2.3.10 reads Yajeta Purusham Purvam rather than Yajeta Purusham Param. This variant refers to the same personality of Godhead. In other words, the complete person Purusham Purnam, the supreme person Purusham Param, and the primeval person Purusham Purvam are the same. Sri Jiva substantiates this equivalence with two related statements from Shruti. In the first, the personality of Godhead declares that he alone was present before the creation of this universe. The second, building upon the first, comments that the Lord's existence prior to everything else distinguishes him as the supreme Purusha. Furthermore, his being quote-unquote alone does not contradict the eternal existence of his spiritual kingdom, inhabited by his countless companions and servants. It simply denies the existence of anything material in the dormant period between creations. According to Sridhar Swami's explanation cited in text 30.3, the name Purusha can refer to the personality of Godhead in more ways than one. In one sense, the Purusha is the Godhead in his original fullness as he is in the spiritual world. Govindamani Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the original Purusha. The Purusha is also Lord Govinda's specific expansion as the creator of this world. In fact, there are three Purusha expansions of the Supreme Lord: Karna Dakshai Vishnu, Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, and Shira Dakshai Vishnu, the creators who lie respectively in the causal ocean, in the embryonic ocean of the universal egg, and in the milk ocean. The first Purusha lying on the serpent bed of Anantashesha within the region between the spiritual and material realms initiates the generation of the material world by merely glancing once at Maya, his personal external energy. From his body emanates the egg-like shells of innumerable universes. He then expands himself again into each of these universes to lie down as the second Purusha. When all forms of life are sent forth into the creation, the Lord becomes the third Purusha, entering along with all the living souls into their material bodies. In this way, the Supreme Person, as the Purusha, expands himself to become the Paramatma, or Supersoul. Garbhadakshayi Vishnu is the Supersoul of the total universe, Samashti Paramatma. And Kshirdakshayi Vishnu is the Supersoul of each individual soul, Vyasti Paramatma. Srila Radha Mohan Goswami points out that lexicographers have explained the derivation of the word Purusha in similar terms. One etymology traces Purusha to Pura Asit, he existed previously, and another to Puri Sharira Shete, he sits down in the pur, the material body. Narada Muni speaks in a similar way in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.14.37. Puranyanena Shishtani Nir Tirya Grishi Devataha Shete Jivena Rupena Purushu Pureshu Purusho Hyasau. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has created many residential places, puras, like the bodies of human beings, animals, birds, saints, and demigods. In all these innumerable bodily forms, the Lord as Paramatma resides, Shete, with the living beings. Thus he is known as the Purusha Avatar. He's created many residential places, including the bodies of all living entities.
Can do all that without getting overworked. Huh? Sounds like too much, doesn't it?
Could you? Is that a question?
Yes.
So, I'm reading the prayers of the personified Vedas in the Shrimadbhagavatam right now. And at the beginning of the chapter, he gives Srila Sridhar Swami's invocatory prayers, in which he cites that he's just trying to please the previous commentators on the Bhagavatam. Who are the previous commentators before Sridhar Swami?
Yeah, I think earlier on in this book we may have heard that.
Okay.
There weren't names that I was familiar with that I could just recall. We'd go back and look.
Probably we don't have access to the commentaries anymore or something.
I don't know. But one thing I do know is that a lot of these old manuscripts and scriptures are lost. Mukunda Datta Prabhu was telling me that tens of thousands of original manuscripts are lost every year due to neglect. And a lot of them are written on palm leaves and they just disintegrate, but nobody takes care of them. A lot of them are in villages, in trunks and things like that. Nobody really cares for them. And even in the commentaries and in Jiva Goswami's texts, we've heard over the last few days about how he has to sleuth out the source of many of these things, because he went to a lot of the original manuscripts as much as possible. But sometimes he had to take Madhvacharya's. If Madhvacharya says it, then he takes it as a fact, because he knows Madhvacharya's authoritative, and that Madhvacharya also saw the original manuscripts. And you know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's interesting that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after meeting the Brahmin who was worshipping Lord Ram and was in anxiety because Sita had been stolen away, and Ramdas Vipra, Mahaprabhu then had traveled somewhere else and then found a section of the Kurma Purana that explained how, or is it Agni Purana, that explained how Agni Dev had stolen away, had taken the real Sita.
Hare Krishna, Shah.
Absolutely. Please come in.
So even 400 years ago, Jiva Goswami had to live.
Yeah. And Mahaprabhu found that original manuscript, and actually he took the page from it and brought it back to Ramdas Vipra to show him, here's the original. And then, of course, the Brahma Samhita, he took, you know, with permission from the custodian of the temple commander, he took out the original manuscript to have it copied and so forth. Hare Krishna. And partway through this commentary, I'm not finished with it yet, but I just wanted to read this Prabhupada's purport to this verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has created many residential places, like the bodies of human beings, animals, birds, saints, and demigods. In all of these innumerable bodily forms, the Lord resides with the living being as Paramatma. Thus he is known as Purusha Avatara. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita 18:61, it is said, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridayah Sharjuna Tishkati Pramayan Sarvabhutani Yantra Rudrani Mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity who is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists on the mercy of the Lord, who is always with him in any form of body. The living entity desires a particular type of material enjoyment, And thus the Lord supplies him with a body which is like a machine. Just to keep him alive in that body, the Lord remains with him as the Purusha, Shirdakshaya Vishnu. This is also confirmed in Brahma Samhita 5.35. Eko pyasau racharitum jagadandakotin yachchaktirasti jagadanda chaya yatantaha andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamari purushantam aham bhajami. I worship the personality of Godhead Govinda, who enters the existence of every universe and every atom by one of his plenary portions and thus manifests his infinite energy throughout the material creation. The living entity being part and parcel of the Lord is known as Jiva. The Supreme Lord, Purusha, remains with the Jiva to enable him to enjoy material facilities. So, again, back to the commentary in the Tattva-sandarbha. Srila Radha Mohan Goswami points out that the lexicographers have explained the derivation of the word Purusha in similar terms. One etymology traces Purusha to Pura Asit, he existed previously, and another to Puri Sharire Shete, he sits down in the Pur, the material body. Narada Muni speaks in a similar way in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the verse I just read. Any other examples from the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita where the body is described as Pur, P-U-R? Yeah. Can you say more about it?
No. Well, that's that's actually an allegorical story that Narada Muni tells to
Prachinabhari,
and he compared it to an elaborate story in which the body is compared to a city with the different gates and someone becomes attacked by old age and her forces.
So that's a definite, clear example. The body's described as pur, or a city. How about in the Bhagavad Gita?
Vishnu refers to the body as a city of nine gates.
Can you speak a little louder?
Vishnu refers to the body as a city of nine gates.
Do you know where?
The fifth chapter.
Can you say the verse?
Once upon a time.
Navadwaripure Dehe, yeah. So there he calls the city of nine gates. It's a good way to remember Krishna, to remember that the body is a pur, it's a city with nine gates, and that Krishna is residing within the heart. And here also, Prabhupada's mentioning in the purport to that verse we just quoted, how he's maintaining the body. Someone who's influenced by Maya thinks that I'm maintaining the body. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that due to ahankar, a false ego, someone thinks I'm doing everything, I'm maintaining him. And Krishna says such a person is very foolish. But a person who's fully aware knows that actually the material body, the pur, is just, it's actually going on by the mercy of Krishna, and it's acting like a machine, as was mentioned in this purport. Any comment? Okay. Anything else? Okay, I'm going to keep going.
Well, it compares it to a machine. I'm sure. Machine.
Yeah, it's very mechanical. But it's an amazing machine. It takes a long time for it to incubate, before it even comes out. And for a human child, it takes a long time for a child to develop, even to socialize and so forth, to become socialized. Hare Krishna. Here, we can make more room if you want to move up. There's plenty of room. We fed as many as 2,000 devotees in this room. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is but a partial realization held by those who cannot understand Him as a person, the possessor of creative energies. two primary energies of the Supreme are discussed in this Anuchet. Anuchet means a section of the Sandarbha, which we're talking. And the Sandarbha, it means a collection of something, like a compendium. He's brought together important pieces from all the Shastras, especially from Srimad Bhagavatam. Two primary energies of the Supreme are discussed in this Anuchet, his internal Swarup Shakti and his external Maya. The Lord's Swarup Shakti is in essence his female counterpart, the source of his personal pleasure. She provides him the satisfaction of loving reciprocations with herself in her original form as Srimati Radharani. She satisfies him through her unlimited spiritual expansions that join each of the expanded forms of Godhead, and she satisfies him with the liberated jivas through their devotional service. When Mahavishnu lies down to create the material world in his mystic sleep, Yoga Nidra, within himself, he is actually enjoying his internal pleasure potency. Atmana ramaya reme tekvakalam shishikshaya. That's from the Brahma Sanhita. As he intends to send forth his separated energy, he continues to enjoy with his internal consort, Brahma Samhita 5.7. Maya is a personal energy of the Lord, an expansion of Srimati Radharani, but Maya's function is inferior. She creates and rules the world of illusion, where the personality of Godhead seems absent. Because of her association with the contaminated, rebellious souls, the Lord makes no contact with her after his initial glance, and she keeps herself out of his sight. To explain the difference between the internal and external energies of the Supreme, Srila Baladev Bidyabhushan offers an analogy. The internal energy is like an emperor's favorite queen, the external energy like a menial maidservant who always stays outside his quarters. I'd like to read that one paragraph again because he wrote it really in a beautiful way, right?
That's cool.
Okay, so I'll read it again. Actually, it's two paragraphs. There's a verse in Shastra which says, one who understands these three Purushas becomes liberated and goes back to Godhead. So it's worthwhile exercise to go back over this. According to Sridhar Swami's explanation cited in text 30.3, the name Purusha can refer to the personality of Godhead in more ways than one. In one sense, the Purusha is the Godhead in his original fullness as he is in the spiritual world. Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the original Purusha. The Purusha is also Lord Govinda's specific expansion as the creator of this world. In fact, there are three Purusha expansions of the Supreme Lord: Karnadakshai Vishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and Shiradakshai Vishnu, the creators who lie, respectively, in the causal ocean, in the embryonic ocean of the universal egg, and in the milk ocean. The first Purusha lying on the serpent bed of Anantashesha within the region between the spiritual and material realms initiates the generation of the material world by merely glancing once at Maya, his personal external energy. From his body emanate the egg-like shells of innumerable universes, and then he expands himself. Universal. He then expands himself again into each of these universes to lie down as the second Purusha. When all forms of life are sent forth into the creation, the Lord becomes the third Purusha, entering along with all the living souls into their material bodies. In this way, the Supreme Person as the Purusha expands himself to become the Paramatma or Supersoul. Garbhadakshai Vishnu is the Supersoul of the total universe, Samashti Paramatma, and Shiradakshai Vishnu is the Supersoul of each individual soul, Vyashti Paramatma.
Okay.
Good?
Yeah.
Okay? Any other comments? Yeah.
When you see Mahavishnu, we refer to Karanaj.
Yes.
Has he established at this point that the purport of Ram is home? The guest conventions that even if it'll come, you know, people may take different verses upon the top and come to different conclusions, but is he still establishing that the vision of the writer?
Can you all hear him? You gotta speak a little louder, he's his fan, sorry. He was asking.
Yeah, because when I read, I took a class at BHC many years ago on this, and I was elated when I came to, I was just blown away how wonderful Jiva Goswami was, mm-hmm. Yeah, how he established that all these pramana and how he established why we couldn't understand any verse in Srimad Bhagavatam different from the intentions of the author. And he established the intentions of the author with that, with those instructions of Narada Muni on that. So is that where we're at now?
Yeah, we touched on that yesterday. That he was on the trance of Vyas, and how he had been unsatisfied after compiling all of the other Vedic literatures. And Narada Muni had told him that because you're morose, because you haven't actually given a clear description of the personality of Godhead.
I think that's the point from the transcendental, that Jiva Goswami also concludes in such a way that when all the my buddies or people who do grammar, usually they take shloka and they, by dividing, they bring different meanings.
Yeah.
But he also put in such a way that no matter how much you divide, there is only one conclusion. By dividing words and playing with words, you cannot come with different conclusions. There is only one conclusion in all his books.
Nice, nice point.
Yeah, it's good. It was like 20 years ago since I read it, I guess. Trying to refresh my memory.
32. Having defined the Abhideya and Prayojan, now we can see how the verse beginning, Yaya Samuhito Jiva, quoted in 30.1, gives a firm foundation of these concepts. It states that Vyasadeva saw the constitutional difference between the finite living entity, Jiva, and the Supreme Lord. The Jiva, completely bewildered by the external energy, Maya, thinks himself a material object, the complex of body, mind, and so on, a product of the three modes of nature. He thinks like this even though, by virtue of being a purely spiritual entity, he is in fact separate from everything materially composed of the three modes. Because of thinking like this, he faces unwanted consequences, the troubles of material life. I like the phrase, unwanted consequences. He is in fact separate from everything materially composed of the three modes. Because of thinking like this, he faces unwanted consequences, the troubles of material life. And it, as expressed by the words, bewildered by whom, he thinks, this shows that although the jiva, as pure spirit, is consciousness itself, he also inherently possesses the quality of consciousness. Just as fire, although by nature pure illumination, possesses the power to illuminate both itself and other things. As Sri Bhagavad Gita says, ignorance covers knowledge, and thus the living beings become bewildered. This statement refutes the opposing theory that the jiva is only a temporary designation, upadhi, and that the annihilation of the jiva constitutes liberation. The phrase, bewildered by whom, expresses the idea that it is Maya alone who bewilders, The personality of Godhead does not participate. Srimad Bhagavatam later says, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot stand within his sight, being ashamed of her position, but those bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of, it is I and it is mine. From the words, feeling ashamed, we understand that although Maya herself knows that her duty of bewildering the jivas is not pleasing to the Supreme Lord, she cannot tolerate the jivas' indifference to the Lord. They're ignoring him since time immemorial. Thus she covers their true identities and entangles them in false identities. As described in the verse, fear arises in anyone who turns away from the Supreme Lord and absorbs himself in other things. Commentary. Before aspiring Vaishnavas can begin to make substantial advancement in the Abhideya and Prayojan of spiritual life, in other words, before they can follow the regulative process of sadhana bhakti and gradually achieve the ecstatic perfection of prema bhakti, they must properly understand the difference between the Supreme Soul and the finite jiva souls. The Mayavadis never acknowledge this difference, and therefore they can never know the true Abhideya and Prayojan. Immature Vaishnavas who try to emulate pure love of God without having first assimilated Sambandha Gyan unfortunately become Prakriti Sahajas, materialistic imitators who turn the sublime process of sadhana bhakti into a travesty. We can appreciate the essential difference between God and the living entity in various ways. One is the master and the other a servant. One is infinite and the other infinitesimal. Infinitesimal. In Vyasadeva's vision, we see the jiva bewildered by the Supreme Lord's maya. She has the power to make the jiva forget his spiritual nature and misidentify his self as matter. The Lord, however, is ever free from maya's influence. According to Shankaracharya's Advaitavad, the real nature of the jiva is that he is pure consciousness. With that much, the Vaishnavas have no difficulty agreeing. But Shankara also teaches that on the level of ultimate reality, not only do all dualities disappear, including the distinction between Jivatma and Paramatma, but so also do the separate existence of knower, known, and knowledge. Thus, according to Shankara, the pure self does not have knowledge and is not an object of knowledge. Rather, it is Chinmatra, simply pure knowledge, without duality. The separate existence of the jiva is an illusion, an upadhi, falsely superimposed on undifferentiated praman, which Shankara presents as the ultimate reality. To support this view, the Advaitavadis cite Upanishadic evidence. Yo vijnani tishtan vijnanad antaroyam vijnanam naveda yasya vijnanam shariram. He who stands within vijnana, who is different from vijnana, whom vijnana does not know, whose body is vijnana. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. As interpreted by Mayavad impersonalists, this means that the pure consciousness of the self is transcendental to the specific consciousness, vijnana, or knower, known and knowledge. The pure self, then, is the reality underlying all phenomena, and material consciousness is an upadhi imposed on it. When the pure self is reflected in the illusion of sattva, the material mode of goodness, the result is vijnana, specific consciousness. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. From the mode of goodness, material consciousness arises. From Gita 14:17. Srila Baladev Bidyabhusan points out how the description of Vyasadeva's trance in Srimad Bhagavatam defeats such arguments of the Mayavadis. He asserts that the jivas are not illusory reflections of the Supreme, but that their existence is real and separate. They are eternally conscious living spirits, as confirmed by the words paropi. In Srila Vyasadeva's trance, it is not the Supreme Soul who becomes transformed by Maya, but the consciousness of the Lord's rebellious servants. The Bhagavatam says of the living being, Paropi Manute Nartam, although he is superior, he identifies himself with what is worthless. Anarto Pashanam Sakshad Bhakti Yogam. The direct means of dispelling this worthlessness is devotional service. Prior to becoming deluded, the jivas existed as separate entities, and they will continue to exist separately even after their liberation. Their misidentification with matter is dispelled, not their separate existence. They are pure consciousness, and at the same time they possess consciousness. This is possible in the same way that a lamp, functionally nothing but illumination, still illuminates itself and other objects. Vyasadeva's vision that the jivas become bewildered and think of themselves as products of matter establishes that the finite soul's consciousness is an innate quality that can never be removed from the soul, but can be distorted by the influence of material illusion. After liberation, a jiva remains a possessor of consciousness. Only the direction of his consciousness has been rectified. Vaishnava, yes?
What does it mean for Vaishnavas to have a pure knowledge? Is that a knowledge that I'm concerned with Krishna and describing in this way? Because we're telling them that this is pure knowledge. That actually, Lord possesses pure knowledge. He is pure knowledge. What does that mean?
Yes, it means, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, to understand that one is sanitya nitya sambandha prakritischa paraivasa. The living entity is has an eternal kinship with the Lord. He's simultaneously one and different, and his position is that he's eternally a servant of the Lord.
Chit-shakti is actually one of Krishna.
Can you say a little louder?
Chit-shakti, one of Krishna's energies, actually considered to be a wife of Krishna. So he's the possessor of knowledge.
Could you hear him? Want to say anything more?
Okay. I have a question.
Yes.
Why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna talking about external energy refers as Devi, like divine, this divine of energy of mind, Devi Krishna Guna Mai? Why is it divine?
Well, there's another verse in which Krishna, in his seventh chapter, huh? Yeah, and he talks about Yogamai Samanvitaha. And I just look at that verse. That's Sri Birgunamaya Bhavir Ebi Sarva Midam Jagat Ohitam Navijayati Mamibhyat Paramavriyam, which is verse number 7, what? 7.
3, 11, 12,
but that's not the verse I was looking for, is it? Mohitam Dabjanati Mandya Paramadya. What was the other verse? Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm going to read the verse in question. daivihisha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayametam tarantite. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nityabhata, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. Smoking gun. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in the construction and destruction of the cosmic manifestation. The Vedas confirm this as follows: Mayam tu prakritim vidyan, mayinam tu maheshwaram. Although maya, illusion, is false and temporary, the background of maya is the supreme magician, the personality of God, who is Maheshwara, the supreme controller. Shvetashvatara Upanishad 4.10. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna, or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service or Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of the illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul and out of his paternal affection for the living entity, who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of the stringent material nature. The words mam eva are also significant. Mam means unto Krishna, Vishnu only, and not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and are almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajagun, passion, and Tamagun, ignorance, to release the conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya, therefore he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. The Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.8, confirm this phrase, tam eva viditva, or freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Even Lord Shiva affirms that liberation can be achieved only by the mercy of Vishnu. Lord Shiva says, mukti pradata sarveshvam Vishnur eva na samshayaha. There is no doubt that Vishnu is the deliverer of liberation from everyone. There's a devotee named Magendra who joined the movement in about 1972, and he's an identical twin. And his brother was very active in protests against the Vietnam War and got arrested just after the U.S. government had passed some stringent laws about protesting, because they were trying to keep them down a little bit. and they used him as an example. Someone had thrown like a cherry bomb or something like that, and they just picked him out of the crowd and said it was him, and hauled him in, and he was arrested and taken to jail. And then he got out on bail, and then he jumped bail. Bail means when you're in jail, you can they'll set an amount of money you can pay, and then you can get out of jail before the court case starts, based on the fact that you probably won't want to give up that money, because if you don't come back, then they keep it. So he knew after being in jail for a few months that he couldn't spend 5 years in jail, which is probably what he was going to get. So he just hid himself for several decades. I remember distinctly how when we were in traveling Sankirtan, a lot of times when we get, he was on the FBI's most wanted list. So sometimes when on traveling Sankirtan, when we get pulled over, they'd see McGendrick, who was Harvey Mechanic, and his brother was something like Ken Mechanic or something. And they looked exactly the same. They'd hold them overnight sometimes, and we'd have to wait until they found out that he wasn't on the most wanted list. But his brother had gone underground, changed his name, and started a health food business and became kind of wealthy. And then he was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I guess he was feeling a little self-assured, so he ran for mayor. And a reporter found out by, you know, sort of sleuthing into his past. She was able to uncover the fact that he was, you know, on the lam. He was running away from the law. And so, you know, he begged her not to turn him in, but she, you know, as a journalist, you know, she said it was my duty, so turned him in. And then he turned himself in. And so then they took him back, and then he was going to get a lot more time, because not only had the original thing, but... And so he was looking at the rest of his life pretty much in jail. But right around that time, Bill Clinton had been in office for 2 terms. It was the end of his 8th year, because he had 2 terms of 4. And the President of the United States has the prerogative when he's leaving office to sign these pardons, and nobody can question him. Congress can't question him. None of the other executive branches of government can question. He can just unilaterally decide who he wants to let out of jail. And so, you know, he went down the list, and he was also a conscientious objector against the war and had protested when he was over in Oxford. And so McGendrick's brother was only in jail like a couple of weeks or something like that when the order came down from Bill Clinton saying, you're out. And no trial, no extra thing. It just, all he had to do was check the little box off because, you know, to release him, and he was out and free. So he actually ended up never doing any serious time in jail. But it was a real-life example of what Prabhupada had talked about in this purport, of how Krishna's, you know, the supreme executive, he can just order that, you know, you're out, you're free.
Sometimes it's actually unclear what Maya is, because in this verse it is said that material energy is actually Krishna's energy and is eternal, sometimes manifested, sometimes not manifested. So Maya is actually our illusion that this energy is not connected for Krishna or is not for his pleasure. When we give up this illusion and we see that it's just paraphernalia of Krishna for his service, maybe inferior quality, then this material nature itself is not Maya.
Yeah, in the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam, Ritertam Yat Pratyeta Na Pratyeta Chatmani Tad Vidyada Mano Yat Mayam Yatabhaso Yatatamaha. That Krishna says to Brahma in the original 4 verses of the Bhagavatam that whatever you see that's separate and vision from me is my illusory energy. In other words, if you don't see the connection to it, that it's connected, So Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj last year was giving a class in Mayapur, and he said, so all facts are not true. Everyone's like, what are you talking about? And then he quoted this verse, or not, but he maybe implied this verse, Ritirtam Yat Pratyeta, that if you don't see the relationship to Krishna, then it's Maya. And then there's a verse in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, that in which Shukadeva Goswami says that if one's family life isn't connected to Krishna, then the house that one lives in is just like a prison cell. And all the paraphernalia one has, they're all, and family members, they're all like foot shackles and so forth, you know, just bound down. But if Krishna's in the center, then as we see in the residents of Raj, they're all family people. They have tons of paraphernalia, pots and pans and cows and houses and all kinds of stuff. But it's all for Krishna's service, so it's all transcendental. And also, Prabodhananda Saraswati gives this verse about how he sees the entire world as the abode of joy. You know, isn't in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mamu Peti Punarjama Tu Kalayam Ashashvatam. This is temporary, miserable place, and Prabodhananda says, it's the abode of joy. Because he's seeing how everything. And that's also the definition of the Uttama Adhikari given in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, is that the devotee sees how everything is engageable in Krishna's service. That's how he's viewing the universe, is that it can all be connected. It's all connected, and he just can't engage enough because there's so much, you know, to engage. Some, yes, Sam.
I'm really appreciating this fluid understanding of the similarities, the relationship between Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Because as I'm reading the Bhagavatam, actually, one thing I find interesting and kind of confusing is that the term Yoga Maya is actually used in some places for the activities of the external potency. And in one place, in reference to Devaki, she's said to have been placed under the influence of that energy, that Vishnu, of that energy of Vishnu's that manifests the material, that manifests like creates the manifestation or something, and destroys it. And Jiva Goswami says that actually this is not referring to the external energy, because this could refer to the energy that creates Krishna's pastimes. So it seems like it's kind of a fluid presentation. You know?
Yeah, and that brings us back to the I think it's Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yogamai Samavita. So I'll just fast forward a little bit, because I can. And here it is. 25. Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrita. 725, that is, for those who are keeping score. Mudo yam nabijanati lokamam ajam avyayam. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. So Yogamaya, in the word for word, is internal potency. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Purport, it may be argued that since Krishna was visible to everyone when he is present on this earth, how can it be said that he was not manifest to everyone? But actually, he was not manifest to everyone. When Krishna was present, there were only a few people who could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the assembly of Kurus, when Shishupal spoke against Krishna's being elected president of the assembly, Bhishma supported him and proclaimed him to be the Supreme God. Similarly, the Pandavas and a few others knew that he was the Supreme, but not everyone. He was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that but for his pure devotees, all men consider him to be like themselves. He was manifest only to his devotees as the reservoir of all pleasure, but to others, to unintelligent non-devotees, he was covered by his internal potency. In the prayers of Queen Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. This Yoga Maya curtain is also confirmed in the Ishapanishad, Mantra 15. in which the devotee prays, Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham tatvam pushana pavrenu satyadharmay drishte. O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore, I pray that you will also maintain me. Your transcendental form is covered by the yoga maya. The Brahma Jyoti is the covering of the internal potency. May you kindly remove this glowing effulgence that impedes my seeing your Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Your eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in this transcendental form of bliss and knowledge is covered by the internal potency of the Brahma Jyoti, and the less intelligent impersonalists cannot see the Supreme on this account. Also in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.7 there is this prayer by Brahma, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Supersoul, O Master of all mystery, who can calculate your potency and pastimes in this world? You are always expanding your internal potency, and therefore no one can understand you. Learned scientists and learned scholars can examine the atomic constitution in the material world or even the planets, but still they are unable to calculate your energy and potency, although you are present before them. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is not only unborn but also avyaya, inexhaustible. His eternal form is full of bliss and knowledge, and all are inexhaustible. Didn't have what I was looking for. And maybe it's another commentary. There was, yes.
Bhaktivedanta Puna Maharaj brings this point many times that actually internal energy and external energy, Mahamaya and Yogamaya, is the same person. So when we deal with her to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, she manifests for us this internal energy. But when we try to enjoy this energy for ourselves, then she manifests this external energy. But it's actually the same person. It's only dependent on our perception and how we deal with it.
Yeah, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the Jyotishtapur Brahmin, who's a poor Brahmin living in a village, and their family deity is Kamakya Devi, who's an expansion of Durga. And he doesn't know anything about spiritual life, only by cultural momentum is he worshipping this deity. And then one night the deity appears to him in a dream and gives him a Krishna mantra and says, chant this mantra. In that Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami explains how Durga Devi's expansion of Radharani. And ultimately, we find out later on that Radharani is the one who has sent Gopal Kumar to the earth to intercept this Brahmin and teach him and to bring him back to Godhead. And so there's this connection.
Explain why Yoga
Mantra from Yoga Maya is used in such a similar
way in Bhagavatam. Yes. Where Devaki accepts the influence of Paramahamaya, which is the pure body of Sushumna, which is actually external energy. Yeah. Everyone okay? Yes. Yeah. One more point there. Goswami says that the course of zero being influenced by mind is indifference for the one.
So he's saying that, according to Jiva Goswami, of what we just read, the reason that the Jiva is influenced by Maya is because of indifference? I think Gopi referred to the verse Bhayam Dvitiya Abhinibesha Tasya Ishad Apetasya Viparya Osmiti, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also taught to Sanatana Goswami from the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, which says that Ishad Apetasya Viparya Osmiti, the living entity turns his head away from, he turns away in the wrong direction. Turns away from the Lord, and therefore he's asmitihi. He has wrong intelligence, and therefore he becomes full of fear.
Was it in Brahma? It was in Jewish.
Pardon?
It seems to me it was in the text.
Yeah.
In the text, okay. Yeah, it was, but there was a footnote, and it relates to this verse by Dvitiya. Yes?
In one place, Srila Prabhupada says that those living entities who fail to develop transcendental love for Krishna are forced to come here. And there is example given that those brahmanas who are doing yajna, they were actually not interested in Krishna. Their wives, they serve to Krishna, so they are given as the example of the souls who are situated in the spiritual environment, but because they are indifferent, they may be actually on the way to the material world. Because they are not really interested to serve Krishna or develop his relation.
Prabhupada Siddhanta talks in the same way in the context of the fall of the Juno question, that it's a question of indifference.
Indifference. Yeah.
We also know that those who go to spiritual world to Vaikuntha, they never come back. And then once in Bhagavatam, the third canto, where they talk about Jaya Mijaya, they fall down to do offense to Kumaras. And Srila Prabhupada says that some living entities, they just don't enter Vaikuntha. They like Jaya Mijaya, they haven't been there. They've been near the gate. But I couldn't really understand it. Like, they close to in some spiritual reality.
It's an endless conversation, it never ends. It's not conclusive. Continuing in the Tapasandarbha, yes.
In this regard, if jiva is marginal energy, so it means that it's actually neutral, so what is the default position?
Means what?
It's in neutral position, not neutral. It can be under the influence of the spiritual energy or material energy. So neutral means that actually situated in between. So we have this option to go this way or that way. So that might be. But this neutral situation means that you are in the spiritual environment.
You're indifferent to it.
Huh?
So you can be indifferent to it.
Yeah. You are in the situation, but you're not doing anything about it. Not taking it.
Somehow or other, I have fallen into this material energy. Vaishnavacharyas faithfully elucidate the statements of the Upanishads and other scriptures in accordance with the overall intention of the Vedas. Vaishnavacharyas faithfully elucidate the statements of the Upanishads and other scriptures in accordance with the overall intention of the Vedas. Vaishnavacharyas faithfully elucidate the statements of the Upanishads and other scriptures in accordance with the overall intention of the Vedas. They do not violate or distort those statements by ignoring their context and unbefittingly interpret their words. They simply explain that the pure self who, quote, stands within Vijnana and who is different from Vijnana is the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead, and that Vijnana is regularly used as it is in the Taittiriya Upanishad and other Vedic texts as a term for the Jiva Soul. Thus they explain that the sentence beginning Yo Vijnani Tishtan is not speaking about the pure selves transcending all consciousness of distinctions. Just the opposite, it speaks about the real distinction between the Jivatma and Paramatma, and about real knowledge of that distinction. Vaishnavacharyas go on to explain that the Bhagavad Gita's statement, knowledge arises from the mode of goodness, in context refers to the relatively less deluded condition of jivas who have risen to the highest mode of material influence, rather than to a supposed state before the creation in which material consciousness did not exist. Srila Baladev Vidyabhusan expresses the opinion in his commentary to this Anuchet that first the jiva's consciousness becomes covered by envy of the Supreme Lord and then is further covered by Maya when she places him in illusion. Baladev likens this to the way a fire covered by a pot becomes further covered by darkness when the exhaustion of available oxygen extinguishes its flame. Similarly, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the 7th chapter of his Vaishnav novel, Jiva Dharma, depicts the process of the jiva's fall from his original spiritual life. Quote, two states of the jiva are clearly perceivable, the liberated state and the state of bondage to material existence. A jiva who is a pure devotee of Krishna, who either never became bound by Maya, or who, by Krishna's mercy, has gained freedom from bondage to Maya, is in the liberated state. A jiva who has become inimical to Krishna and has then fallen into the grasp of Maya since time immemorial is in the state of bondage to material existence. Text 33. Jiva Goswami. Nor can the Lord fail to be kindly disposed to her, Maya, the presiding deity of matter, his servant since the creation. He desires, moreover, that the jivas turn back toward him, even if only out of fear of her. Thus he instructs, this divine energy of mine consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. By cultivating such knowledge, a person gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. That's Satam Prasangam. Text 33.2. The Supreme Lord, in his pastime appearance as Sriman Vyas, taught the above most explicitly. We will see this later when we discuss the text, quote, the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated. Thus, the behavior of both the Lord and Maya is appropriate. But, someone may question, Maya is an energy, and energy means a capacity to do work, which is a particular quality of something. How then can Maya feel shame and other emotions? Our answer is that even though Maya is in fact an energy of the Lord, we hear from Shruti authority about the presiding goddess of numerous such energies. As, for example, in the conversation between Indra and Maya in the Kena Upanishad, in any case, let us now return to our main topic, says Jiva Goswami. Commentary. Shall I read the commentary? Yes? Okay. In the ultimate issue, the personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. The personal energies help him in his activities, but at the same time are dependent on him, their absolute origin and controller. The Lord's internal energy arranges his pleasures in the spiritual world. His external energy creates and rules the material world. The jivas who belong to his marginal energy are free to subordinate themselves to either of the Lord's ruling energies, the internal or external. Maya, being a pure devotee of the Lord, does not like to see anyone suffer, but as unpleasant as it may be, imprisoning and punishing the souls who turn away from God is her service to him. She performs this service only because the Supreme Lord wills her to. The Lord wants every one of his creatures to be happy always, but true happiness outside voluntary loving service to him is impossible. He deputizes Maya to teach this lesson to the forgetful jivas by various means. Those who are sufficiently intelligent can learn simply by hearing from Vedic authority, while others need to be instructed more sternly. This world was created not only for our material enjoyment and suffering, but much more importantly for our spiritual re-education. Budhindriya manat pranam jananam asrijat prabhu matrartam cha bhavartam cha atmane kalpanaya cha. The Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. That's from 1087 too. Is that prayers personified Vedas?
Yes.
Yeah. Because the discussion there, prayers personified Vedas, is about how there's a dual purpose for the human life, either for facility for material enjoyment or for going back home, back to Godhead. Can we have a look at it?
Yeah. I was just reading it last night.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. I like when Gopi Panda Prabhu was saying that true happiness outside of voluntary loving service to him is impossible. I thought that was very succinct.
It's helpful. Shukadeva Goswami said, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. The jivas who learn to properly fear Maya become interested in taking shelter of the Supreme Godhead, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Vedas teach them to do so by keeping company with his pure devotees. Tadvidhi pranipatena. Learn the science of spiritual reformation by submitting to the guidance of self-realized Vaishnavas. Bhagavad Gita 4:34. Mature, pure devotees of the Lord constantly chant his glories, but even in the company of immature devotees who still waste time talking about mundane concerns, eventually one will hear the glories of the Lord. This glorification of the Lord, Sankirtan, is the most potent spiritual medicine. It is the specific tonic for counteracting... Who has got your dictionary? Here, there's one on here. Just look up tonic. It is the specific tonic for counteracting all material infirmities of the ear and heart. This writing is very nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to read it again. This glorification of the Supreme Lord, Sankirtan, is the most potent spiritual medicine. So you can use these couple lines when you're selling a book. You hand them the book, say, this glorification of the Supreme Lord, this is about Sankirtan. It's the most potent spiritual medicine. It's a specific tonic for counteracting all material infirmities of the ear and heart. I'll take it. Did you find tonic?
Here it is, yeah. Should I skip the obvious incorrect translation? Or just do on everything?
Yeah, just from the top, because okay, we might find something interesting.
When a characterized by tonus, tonic contraction of muscle, also marked by prolonged muscular contraction.
Oh, that's okay. Then skip to the part. I didn't know you meant that. Yeah.
Here we go. 2A, increasing or restoring physical or mental tone, refreshing.
Can you say, speak a little, like, you have to...
Increasing or restoring physical or mental tone, refreshing.
Increasing or restoring
physical or mental tone.
That's what a tonic does. Okay.
Yielding a tonic substance. Producing or adapted to produce healthy muscular condition and reaction organs as muscles. Tonic. Greek tonikos from tonos. Tension, tone.
Okay, homework. Everyone has to use tonic in a conversation sometimes. And mention how the Sankirtan is the specific tonic for counteracting all material infirmities of the ear and the heart.
Sankirtanic.
The disglorification of the Supreme Lord Sankirtan is the most potent spiritual medicine. It is the specific tonic for counteracting all material infirmities of the ear and the heart. Yeah. Yeah. Nivrtitarsha upadhiyamana bhava shotra manobhirama kautama shloka gunani vada puvandira jeta vina pashudna the verse that starts off the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says that only those who are free from material thirst will have an interest in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Aishami. Yeah, and also Sarvopadiva Nirmuktam Taprina Nirmalam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktira Uchite. Just by the process of devotional service, then the senses become purified. Yeah, according to the perspective. But unless someone has sort of a trust in the acharyas and understands their ultimate purpose in mentioning these things, and the difference between that there's a dichotomy in this world between matter and spirit, and that justifying the two is to those who are in illusion is sometimes a tricky business. For instance, people sometimes think that the pastimes of the Lord are objectionable for many reasons. You know, they'll read the Mahabharata and they'll think, you know, why did Krishna lie? Why did he tell Yudhishthira to lie? That wasn't very good. I had this experience recently. Somebody who was a new devotee, and then on the advice of somebody, went off and read the and a condensed version of Mahabharata and Ramayana, and came back with all these questions about why certain people did certain things and so forth. And there's a way in which these two perspectives about Maya being, you know, a witch and also a servant are not understandable unless one has, you know, a greater perspective.
I guess I'm confused sometimes about how I should feel about Maya, like, because on one stage as you're saying there's a dichotomy, but in reality there's no dichotomy, like everything is Krishna, so it's Krishna's external energy. So I'm really confused a lot of the time about how I should I be trying to see everything as Krishna, or am I not at that level and I should be discriminating?
Well, one thing Prabhupada says in his purports that I found very interesting is that not only should one prosecute the rules and regulations of devotional service, but one must also be careful. And there's a way in which, you know, in being careful, one can, you know, I see everything in relationship to Krishna, therefore, you know, I understand that that's Maya. So I'll be a little more liberal because that's actually Krishna's divine energy. And then the next thing you know, you're captured. Because Daivahiyesha Gunamaya Imama Maya, the living entity, you know, is rather clever and bright and can create all kinds of things and then become captured by them, actually. He gets the intelligence from Krishna how to build a television set or something else, and then ends up sitting in front of it for the rest of his life, you know. It's just material energy, but he's like, wow. So I think, you know, a little bit of both have to be there. That's why both are there. You know, we have to see connection, but at the same time, we have to walk very carefully in the world. That's why there's etiquette, and there's ways in which, you know, devotees are taught by example to, you know, respect my appreciate Maya as being connected to Krishna, but don't look too long and start really appreciating. It's like, wow, yeah, okay. Yeah, don't stare at the sun.
I'm still trying to find this, like, level of myself. I haven't gotten this down. I'm not so sure. I'm still trying to understand how long I should be following.
Yeah, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shapaki Cha Pandita Samadarshana. A learned person sees with equal vision a Brahmin, a cow, a dog eater, outcast, and so forth. But it doesn't mean that he'll go and hang out with a tiger or something like that.
Okay. Unless you're Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, unless you're Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But, you know, just because you see the difference, you know, that there's a soul within that body. You know, you see the monkeys all the time, and I watch them, and they go like, yeah, a little jiva's in that body. But I'm not going to walk over and, you know...
Stop. Yeah.
Exactly. They're dangerous, actually. You were going to say?
Yeah, many years ago I heard a class by Bhakti Choswami. He was talking about Maya, and he said that devotees can pray to Maya Devi, because she's a devotee of Krishna, to help them so that she doesn't cover them and help them on their health aspect. I thought that was nice, like, to think of her as to meditate on how she is a devotee of Krishna and ask for help, because we are weak, so.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The gopis pray to her to engage in Krishna service, to have Krishna. Yeah. And in that sense, Prabhupada mentions there's nothing. In fact, we just heard it in one of the classes somewhere, either here or this morning, that there's no harm in praying to the demigods, worshipping the demigods, long as we understand their relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, it's we're prashandis, yes.
Just coming back to the tonic, there is this discussion between Srila Prabhupada and Dr. Kapoor, where he's asking Prabhupada, can you give me the tonic that you use? What tonic? And he says, the tonic of Krishna Prema. There is this conversation, or the memories about Prabhupada.
And then also, did he say, I don't, he said, I can give you the formula. I give you the recipe, the formula. He said, what is that? Trinada pisu nichena, torota pisu. That's really sweet. So what is it? Krishna, I can give you the formula for that. And then that gives you, that's really the base. That trinada pisu nichena. I'll read the sentence and then I'll continue from there. This glorification of the Supreme Lord Sankirtan is the most potent spiritual medicine. It is the specific tonic for counteracting all material infirmities of the ear and heart. Does everyone have that down so you can do your homework? Infirmities means to be ill. Like. Applied through the ear according to the standard prescriptions, this tonic quickly travels to the heart, where the best of purifiers is present to assist the cure. Srinivatam swa kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridantakstohi badrani vidunoti suritsatam. Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire from material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. I feel like we're associating with Gopi Puranadana Puru in a very intimate way. He's in ecstasy here, putting these things in. Sometimes by his words and sometimes by his actions, each time the Supreme Lord appears in this world, he gives instructions for the jiva's salvation. Krishna, the original form of the Lord, spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, and his literary incarnation, Dvaipayana Veda Vyas, systematically taught Vedic knowledge to the human society in Kali Yuga. Because Srila Vyas is the first of our spiritual preceptors, the seat occupied by any bona fide acharya is honored as the Vyasasana. Maya is also our teacher, but some may question how she can have intentions and feelings if she is merely energy, an unconscious thing. Energies are specific qualities of substantial entities, like a fire's heat or a person's enthusiasm.
One of the most consistent themes of the Vedas, however, is that every aspect of natural energy in this world has its presiding deity, a living being who regulates and administers it. Srila Jiva Goswami tells us, for example, that in the Kena Upanishad, Maya appears in person. She is the deity of the total material energy and is also known as Uma, the daughter of the Himalaya mountains and the wife of Lord Shiva. What follows is a conversation between Indra and Uma from the Kena Upanishad 3.1 through 0.2. Once the Supreme fought on behalf of the gods and won victory for them. By this victory of the Supreme, the gods became glorified. They thought, this is our own victory and our own glory. The Supreme understood their mentality and so manifested himself before them. The gods, however, did not recognize the Supreme. They asked, who is this Yaksha? They told the fire god Agni, O knower of everything created, find out who this Yaksha is. He answered, yes, I will do it. Agni came before the Yaksha, who asked him, who are you? Agni replied, I am indeed the god of fire. I know everything created. What power do you possess? Indeed, I can burn anything that exists in this world. The Yaksha placed a blade of grass in front of Agni and said, burn this. Agni approached the grass and tried with all his might to burn it, but could not. Returning to the gods, he told them, I could not discover who this Yaksha is. Then they told the wind god Vayu, O wind, find out who this Yaksha is. He answered, yes, I will do it. Vayu came before the Yaksha, who asked him, who are you? Vayu replied, I am indeed the god of winds. I am the swift traveler of outer space. What power do you possess? Indeed, I can lift up anything that exists in this world. The Yaksha placed a blade of grass in front of Vayu and said, lift this. Vayu approached the grass and tried with all his might to lift it, but could not. Returning to the gods, he told them, I could not discover who this Yaksha is. Then they told Indra, O munificent king of the gods, find out who this Yaksha is. Indra answered, yes, I will do it. Indra approached the Yaksha, but as soon as he came near, the Yaksha disappeared. Just then, a resplendent woman appeared in the sky above that place. She was Uma, daughter of the Himalayas. Indra approached her and asked, who was that Yaksha? She told him, this was the Supreme. By that Supreme's victory only have you, the gods, become glorious. Thus Indra could understand that was the Supreme. Therefore, these gods, Agni, Vayu, and Indra, are greater than the other gods, for they came into close contact with the Supreme, and they were the first to understand this is the Supreme. Text 34. The phrases, under his shelter and by whom the Jiva is bewildered, also show the difference between the Jiva and the Supreme Lord, even though the Jiva, like him, is pure spirit. Yes.
That story we just heard illustrated what lost the connection.
I'll back up and read the paragraph ahead of time for these. Maya is also our teacher, but some may question how she can have intentions and feelings if she is merely energy, an unconscious thing. Energies are specific qualities of substantial entities, like a fire's heat or a person's enthusiasm. One of the most consistent themes of the Vedas, however, is that every aspect of natural energy in this world has its presiding deity, a living being who regulates and administers it. Srila Jiva Goswami tells us, for example, that in the Kena Upanishad, Maya appears in person. She is the deity of the total material energy and is also known as Uma, the daughter of the Himalaya mountains and the wife of Lord Shiva. What follows is a conversation between Indra and Uma from the Kena Upanishad. Does that help? Yes.
When somebody is abused in this world, usually they disconnect with their emotions. So material nature is unconscious because she doesn't want to know that we are using it for our own pleasure, because the material nature is Krishna's energy and its only purpose is to serve Krishna. Therefore, that's one explanation I have heard.
Can you say it again?
The material energy is unconscious because it doesn't want to know that it's abused to not serve to Krishna, but it's abused by living entities to enjoy it.
She's unconscious. She remains
like
covered.
Dead matter is not conscious. Because we know that in the spiritual energy is conscious. Everything is conscious.
Mm.
But the dead matter is not conscious because we're using it to please ourselves. So this energy doesn't want to know that it's used not to serve Krishna, because actually it's abuse.
It's in denial.
What did you say? Yeah, I mean, material nature is bhinna, it's separated. And how is it separated by consciousness?
My point was that this material energy actually is unconscious. Because we even say it's dead matter, it doesn't have a consciousness. And one explanation I heard why is because we are actually using this energy to try to enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, my statement agreed with yours. When Krishna says, you know, he names the elements, Bhumir Apo Nalo Vayu Kamano Buddha Evacha Hankara Ityami Binna Prakriti Rashtira, that these are my separated material energies. And just that what it means for them to be separated. And because in another verse, in the fourth chapter, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagnau Brahmanau Hutam Brahmaiva Tenagam Tavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina, Krishna talks about how any of these elements that are engaged in his service then become Brahman. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, the matter is simply spirit covered by ignorance.
So the results you gain is devotional, but it doesn't change the quality that still you do with that matter. Therefore, it is spiritualized.
Spiritualized, yeah. You were going to say?
It just reminded me of that section of Agni Puran you were trying to point out, where as soon as Ravana, if I'm not mistaken, you know, came in contact with the internal potency, he actually came in contact with the external potency, which is not accessible to that mood of trying to explode. What he's trying to say is that internal potency doesn't make itself accessible to the material world. It gives it a kind of reflection that the conditioned soul can use in its attempt to try and enjoy falsity.
Nice. Yeah. We just heard little Ram Leela the other day about how Lakshman put his Rekha, these three lines, in front of Sita Devi. And when Ravana came, he understood that he couldn't cross those lines. They were too potent. And he got Sita to remove them so he could go in. But just as she did, the fire came out. And Agni Purana then talks about how within that fire was the exchange took place. And Agni took in the real Sita and the Maya Sita came out. And that's who Ravana took. It's nice. Okay, realizations from being in the Dham. We'll go around clockwise. Shruti will start.
Okay.
Your main realization from being in the Dham so far
is that all of the spiritual potencies become much more real because you're right there. When you're chanting Krishna's name, you feel Krishna's there, it all becomes like magnified. Everything is much more intense.
Can you hear? They can't hear you.
I thought it'd be magnified, but I guess it wasn't. That everything here is much more magnified when I'm chanting that you can feel Krishna's focus in there, you feel Krishna's energy everywhere. everything here is magnified and the spiritual potency is increased. It's like that Maya has a hard time creating that covering here. As you see it when it comes and goes, it's not as... When any Maya comes, you immediately see the difference.
Thank you.
For the work?
Well, I just got in last night and I'm waiting for my subtle body to arrive. And all I experience is an intense struggle at this point. I want to see this beyond the surface and try to understand how Krishna's present here, but that's not happening. Just being honest.
I've been very busy with the service since I had arrived, but maybe what Rumi said, that difference between material and spiritual energy, I think that one has to make a conscious decision, maybe there's another word, but what you want to actually focus on, what you want to get. Well, that was my meditation upon entering Vrindavan. I wanted to go deeper into Vrindavan, look into superficial Vrindavan. But sometimes superficial things, they're also here, material energies also here, isn't it? I understand that sometimes it can really cover and bewilder us and prevent us from going deeper into understanding. And so that was my meditation. That's what I
wanted
from this
visit. Nice. So you expand. It could be either your realization or your meditation while you're here. Nice. Thank you.
I don't have much experience, but I feel like all the weaknesses
more vulnerable while you're here. So the
weaknesses are
exposed.
Your
weaknesses
are more obvious to you. More obvious to you. I experience that.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Nice. Thank you.
I'm thinking all the time that everything becomes opened up in the spiritual world, and all the knowledge comes according to our level of faith. And so, I was just hoping that somehow in this month there will be opportunity to develop more desire to serve Krishna that will increase the faith, and of course that changes all the reality around. That's become very easy to see Krishna in everything, and struggling is not really struggling, just if you have stronger faith. And of course it comes from many, many things, kirtan and austerities, reading, chanting, all the things. But this place is so auspicious for that. You don't need to struggle to get this knowledge. You can see the mercy and take it everywhere. Because it's obviously so manifest here, because of the devotees who come. But my main realization is that you can get it without humility and patience. So I'll be praying to Krishna to attain humility and faith.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Two things came to mind. One is that I have really been focusing on Srila Prabhupada's the role that he played for creating Shabana Dhirana. And one of my favorite things to do is to sit by the pillar that's in the temple near Konikai's side, like right near Prabhupada's Vyasa Sun, and just kind of sit there and nobody really sees you. They all walk, the pilgrims walk in. And I just like sitting there and then watching the pilgrims turn to Srila Prabhupada, the way that a lot of the elderly pilgrims, the way that they look at Prabhupada with so much love and affection, and they look like they're seeing him, like there's some connection going on. And it's really touching to me to watch that. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, I was meditating a lot on how Srila Prabhupada has affected the lives of so many people through this temple. So that was one thing. And the second thing was, what became apparent to me is how desires here are very easily, spiritual desires are very easily satisfied, or very quickly satisfied here. For example, I was at Radha Damodar Temple the other day, and I went to Rupa Goswami Samadhi, and there was a lot of dirt on the floor, and I was feeling like a strong desire to sweep it, clean it, and I looked around, there was no broom, and I was just thinking about it for about 2 or 3 minutes. Suddenly, this elderly Vraj Vasudev walks in with the broom, and she comes up to me and she goes, here, and she hands me
the
broom.
Wow.
And I was just like blown away, because I never experienced that fast of reciprocation, and I was very touched, because sweeping is one of my favorite services. It's just something I've always liked to do since I was a kid, so I just found it was like the culmination of that whole service.
Nice. Well done. Excellent. Thank you.
This was service of Shimon.
Say it loud.
Service of Shimon.
Nice.
And this is what Srila Prabhupada was doing before coming to the West, was actually sweeping in the courtyard next to the Samadhi of Srila Prabhupada's family. And he was crying. He was praying for it.
So now when you go back, you can double book distribution. He's the sweeper.
He's the sweeper
of the market. Yeah. Nice.
I was thinking a lot about what it means to be present in the dawn. Because I've been finding, especially lately, that like John was saying, like, so many desires are coming and it's all intensified. And it's just like, trying to be present in the Dham, in the association of devotees, and like realizing the auspiciousness of this opportunity. It's just hard to fathom. And sometimes I get overwhelmed by just feeling unable to appreciate this opportunity and fully take advantage of it. Because somehow when I'm away, I always think of Vrindavan and just like long to be here. But then I find myself here now, and it's like, it's not what I expected or something. Like, I don't feel the right consciousness to fully take advantage of this. Mm. So I've been struggling with how to figure out how to be present. But definitely association is the most important thing.
Nice. Thank you very much.
hearing the association.
Yeah, good point. Yes.
I experience the same thing what she's saying, what she's talking about in the kirtans, because I'm so much longing for this 24-hour kirtan, especially Samadhan. And I'm so much longing for that when I'm out of Vrindavan, the same thing. And when I get into the kirtan, I can't be present there, and I can't really ground myself. And I think one of the reasons why I feel, for me, the reasons for that is that I feel it's going to go away. It's not going to be... You know, it's just not gonna last. It has its end for me to be in that situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you make me feel the same.
Totally.
You know,
and then I go on this whole guilt trip that, like, I'm here, but I'm not here. Yeah, and it's just so many distractions, and like desires are coming up, and like anarthas, and you see your weaknesses. And I'm actually wondering how you get out of this cycle. It's also for me, the guilt comes in along with that. Like, I'm here and I've always desired to come, and then it's just...
Sam looked like he was about ready to respond.
Well, it was something that I felt about the last time I was here, which is the first time I was here. And I think maybe I had a small realization that I was going to share about that when it came time for me to speak. And one thing is that I realized about myself that one of the barriers to my actually experiencing the Dhamma being present was my own sense of it's kind of like an arrogant feeling of being convinced that I know what a Krishna is. Krishna is like this, it's like in this way. Mm-hmm. Kirtan is like this. But Vrindavan is so extremely deep, and the moods of the devotees are so beyond, far beyond me. And the way in which emotion plays itself out. So my realization was that when the service comes to me, no matter if I was expecting it or not, or if I had an idea of how my trip was going to be, or what my day was going to be like, or my week, or what have you, if I just take that service and go with it, it's far better than I could imagine if I try to figure out like an itinerary. Because I really struggled that last time, and this time I was given some service coming into the Dham, and I tried to embrace it, and I feel like it made a big difference for me. Because there's an arrangement being made, and there's, you know, that internal energy is acting in a personal way. But I get in the way with my own kind of stuff. That's just me. So.
Nice. Is that what you were going to say for your realization also?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also that my other realization about the Dham is that it's a home to a lot of really, really wonderful devotees, like the graph of the density of, you know, devotional odd in one place is really wonderful. Everywhere you look, you're feeling just so much from the devotees who are walking by, chanting, doing their services. There's a lot of gratitude in that association.
Thank you.
I have a similar realization that association is so important. It's, I think, the most important thing.
He's saying that he has similar realization that association is the most important thing.
Yeah. Should I speak louder?
Either that or I can just repeat it, because I'm...
yes. And I like swimming in this nectar association. So many nice devotees, Srila Prabhupada disciples here, so many, just so concentrated. And also I feeling that too much when I'm a woman, sometimes covering my consciousness, I get the words not penetrate.
He said he was swimming in the association, and sometimes you feel too heavy, that the witch? Tamaguna?
Covering my consciousness.
The Tamaguna covering your consciousness.
Yeah, and the words of the devotees, they can penetrate my ears. But still, it's such a nice experience.
So, thank you very much. Trouble means? Okay.
Whatever you want to interpret that.
All right. Thank you very much.
I just heard yesterday that there is so much happening in the town. When you were talking, I was just going to Krishna, what should I say? And there's one thought which came to my mind. And I'm totally amazed how wonderful Krishna and his devotees are. Because Krishna doesn't need our service. Those devotees who are around him, Srimati Radharani, Gopis, our acharyas, they do their first service in the perfect way and are completely pleasing to Krishna. So I was thinking how compassionate they are, that they are eager to give me opportunity to assist them in their service. How wonderful qualities a person has to have to take somebody who is completely in my ignorance. And not only for me, but for everyone who is here. They're actually willing to give us this opportunity and share their service. So, this is something amazing for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Same thought of what the devotee said, it seems like it's pointing out that we need to be open for the unexpected or the miracles. We can't plan what's going to happen here or know what's going to befall us or even hope that we'll be in the right consciousness, maybe. But if we just are open and humble, then Krishna will guide our journey. We'll get what we're supposed to get while we're here.
How can we appreciate humility?
And what is humility? I have this question written somewhere.
Well, we got to ask somebody who's actually humble. See?
Now we see.
I told you.
I just read that section in Brihadaranyaka that describes the ultimate humility of the gopis, and it's intimately linked with their love for Krishna. Can you remember more of that?
Well, it's called Dainya. And Sanatana Goswami says that prema and Dainya are indistinguishable. Dainya means utter humility. And then Sanatana Goswami in his commentary gives really clear definitions of what humility, real humility is. It doesn't mean becoming morose or having low self-esteem. And he says that it's expressed in all of one's activities, in one's speech, in one's movements, everything that one does. Will express this kind of dānya that one experiences. And it's also not a... it's not from the mental platform. It's not an intellectual exercise. Well, now I'm going to be really humble around these people. But it actually... it is a product of self-realization or understanding one's relationship with Krishna. You know, seeing out of gratitude that I'm completely dependent on him in all aspects of my life and on the devotees and so forth. It says as the dānya increases, so does prema, that they move in a parallel as one becomes advanced in devotional service. But he also says, Sanatana Goswami, that one should practice dānya. Although I said it's not an intellectual exercise. And of course, Mahaprabhu says the same thing. Trinadapi Sumichina. One should be ready to offer all respects to others. Means that you have to be ready for it. It takes a little planning, actually, because as soon as I meet somebody else who has a good idea, and they think, "No, but I have a better idea."
it's absence of mercy, though.
Yes,
and that's all actually mercy and
Krishna. Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to show my definition. Humility to me is I understand what is my position. So I can actually act bold, I can preach, I can be going in different ways, but I always know that I'm just a servant and I'm just a dust. And thinking about my spiritual master, it helps me also to see what is my position and who am I.
Nice.
I was looking at the word humility and it refers to the word humble. And one of the definitions I thought was useful. Ranking low in a hierarchy or scale, insignificant, unpretentious. And it relates to what Guru was saying. So I think there's a nice way of looking at service with devotees and people who could be future devotees, where you kind of feel like this person is a better devotee than I am. Without being, like you said, without that kind of like intellectualized or low self-esteem, it's like a genuine feeling, you know, to have some qualities. closer. And so the feeling that I have from genuinely humble Vaishnavas, the dog, is that they want to make each other some Krishna service and bring them closer to the middle. And that's really the middle, because they're not really trying to bring themselves into the middle at all. So that's
that's the next thing that I'm not expecting is bad thing, is bad thing.
Yeah. And there's the other center, there's the, you know, you come in. That's humble.
Well, I went on Parikram on Ekadashi, walked around Vrindavan, and I had a sense, I was thinking while I was walking around, I love to do Parikram, it's my favorite activity besides book distribution. I get a similar kind of high from it. But I was thinking while I was walking, which I do frequently, that I'm walking in a circle. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes, I mean, when I'm walking, I'm usually going somewhere. I got to go to the office, I got to go to the MVT to get something and come back. It's linear, you know. But the Parikram idea where you're going around in a circle, it's like you're going to end up in the same place, so why are you doing this? You know? So then I was thinking of a big kind of a, you know, like a watch, you know, and those watches that have, they have little springs and levers in them and everything like that, and how, you know, you wind them up. And how my material life, I can feel it, how, you know, it's wound up in me for so many untold eons, activities in the material world, and all those impressions are wound up like on a spool. And Prabhupada talks about that. Huh? The subtle body is like a spool with all these previous impressions on it. So then when I was walking, I was feeling relief. And then I remembered a verse from the Brahma Samhita, Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chapakti Bhajan, where, you know, Yastundra Gopa Matavendra Mahosukarma Pantan Rupa Palabhajana Matanoti, Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chapakti Bhajan, Govindamadi Purusham Tamahamajani, where Brahma says, from Indra down to the little Indra Gopa germ, all are receiving the results of their previous karma and are bound by it, except for one who's engaging in bhakti. And then karmani nirdahati, then that karma is being destroyed. So I had this experience, like that spool, that watch, you know, that's all wound up, is becoming unwound by the process of just walking around Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. And I can just feel the, you know, the dissipation of the previous actions which are averse to bhakti dissipating, because at every step, that was one thing that I appreciated. The other thing, I had a conversation with a brahmachari this morning, and I forget his name. He's stationed in China. What is his name?
Sanjita?
Is that his name? I was sitting with him in the restaurant this morning. You don't know who he is?
Sankirtan
Das. Okay, so Sankirtan Das, he's a really nice devotee.
Yes.
He keeps coming up to me with realizations and suggestions and all kinds of stuff. So he followed me to the restaurant this morning where I was sitting having some juice. And he was saying, you know, it's nice, he said, senior devotees, it's good if they're, he said, everyone's watching them, watching what they do and everything like that. So he said, you know, I saw you going around with the kirtan and in this place and that place. Where were you for japa? Where do you do your japa? And I said, I do my japa over here. And then he started talking about visible sadhana. He said, you know, visible sadhana is really powerful. That and then it was a realization, I just had a practical realization of how important it is to sit together with the devotees in a visible way. And I mean, there's a case for being by yourself sometimes, but it's a stronger case for our Goshtiyanandi background, you know, to think about what the effect is.
And I guess the realization just was that there's an effect, you know, from visible sadhana. I noticed Radhanath Maharaj a lot of times in New Vrindavan or other places where I see him, he'll sit right in the middle of the japa circle, and it's like, all right, he's right there, you know. And other devotees, when they do it, it has a big impact. So it was a realization of how that's important that is. So I'll be definitely sitting in the temple room tomorrow. Those are two realizations I had. One more thing. I was just my own experience of coming to the Dham and dealing with a lot of the, well, some of the things that you're talking about. I like to lock into these hearing and chanting sessions, and I arrange them ahead of time because, you know, that anxiety of, am I taking advantage of the Dham enough and so on, I have that same feeling. But when I'm able to so-called lock into these programs, and when other devotees start coming, then it becomes an institution, and it can't be stopped. There's no way around it, you know. and then it has a life of its own. And we had, over the last 18 years, we've been going out to Govardhan to, you know, do these sessions, hearing and chanting all day long. And there've been some, we've had all the devotees that participate in these, you know, very regulated programs, where the rest of the day, because the hearing and chanting is so intense, and it's for such a long period of the day, the rest of the day is really getting ready, you know, making sure everything else is done so you can sit down and be there present. And it all the other things are sort of incidental, you know, and that becomes the main focus. And at the end of the month, there's this powerful realization about the process of hearing and chanting, that if you just stick to it, and there's times at which it becomes intense, almost too intense for a lot of people to handle, you know. And sometimes you compare it to the parikram at Govardhan, because there's smooth places where the dust is very pleasing on the feet, and then sometimes you go, why'd they put gravel here for the next 2 miles? You know? And so you have to keep walking anyway, because you got to go in the circle, you got to make it all the way around. And with the hearing and chanting, it goes like that too. But at the end of the month, when we walk away and we're, you know, getting in the car to leave, there's this overwhelming sense that, wow, we really did something. Something really happened. I'm changed. And devotees last year who participated, and we heard very intensely for one full month, said that that was life-changing. It'll never be the same, and so forth. And there's this section in the Light of the Bhagavat, and Prabhupada talks about the Chaturmasya, and how students and sannyasa, they'll sit down for 4 months, and they'll study, and they'll do penances and austerities. It's that when you're in the midst of it, you don't realize what the effect is, because you're too close to it. You're just doing it. But he said that when they walk away, when they go out of that environment, then they immediately realize that, oh, I'm different, I've changed. And so that's an experience of organizing these kind of programs, making sure you're in one of them, or that you organize it yourself so that, you know, you get, you know, in one way it's sort of like a mechanical thing, because you have to log the hours. But if you're logging them with intense hearing and chanting, you just can't go wrong. And then Prabhupada says about this Chaturmasya, our lifetime, he says, is a Chaturmasya-like existence. And we may not realize the full effect of our devotional service until we actually leave the body. So,
who said this?
Pardon me?
Who said this?
Prabhupada. Yeah, it's in Light of the Bhagavad, which has a lot of amazing... Prabhupada wrote that book getting ready to go to Japan, because he was sitting in Radha Damodar, and then there was this Cultivation of the Human Spirit convention or seminar going on in Japan, and Prabhupada really wanted to go. So while he was writing letters and trying to get funding so he could go to Japan, he was writing the book so he could present it while he was there. But he never did present it, because he never got to go to Japan. He never got the money. And then after Prabhupada left, that manuscript was still sitting there. It hadn't been published. Tamal Krishna Maharaj put it together
into a book, The Light of the Bhagavad. It's very special. So now it is 4:30, and there's just one more short section with commentary, and then I'd like to read that and then have a kirtan. We can vote. Is that okay? Yes or yes?
Yes.
Okay. Sold. Text 34. The phrases "under his shelter" and "by whom the jiva is bewildered" also show the difference between the jiva and the Supreme Lord, even though the jiva, like him, is pure spirit. Commentary. This Anuchet summarizes the Vedanta philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is known as Achintya Vedaved Bad, the philosophy of the inconceivable sameness and differences and difference between God and his energies. Srila Baladev Bidyabhushan explains, with the help of several scriptural citations, this short but important Anuchet, that the material energy seen by Vyas was under the Lord's shelter indicates the Supreme Lord's control over Maya. By whom the jiva is bewildered indicates the jiva is becoming controlled by Maya. Thus it is self-evident that Vyas saw in his trance the essential difference between the Supreme Controller and the finite soul. Implied is that he also saw the Lord's energy of time, under whose control all events that involve the jivas and matter occur. This means that Vyas saw four distinct entities: the Supreme Controller, the jivas, material nature, and time. All four of these are eternal, according to the Balaveya Shruti. Ataha Vafa Nityani Purusha Prakritir Atma Kalaha. Now, all of these are eternal, the creator, nature, the soul, and time. The Upanishads also state, Nityo Nityanam Chetanash Chetananam Eko Bahunam Yovidatati Kaman. He is one eternal among all eternals, the one conscious being among all conscious beings, the one who supplies the needs of all the others. Katha Upanishad 2.2.13. Ajanmekam Lohita Shukla Krishnam Vi Praja Srijamanam Sarupa Ajoheko Jushamanu Mushete Jahat Hinam Bhukta Bogam Ajo Nya. One female goat gives birth to many offspring like herself, with bodies colored red, white, and black. One male goat lies with her and enjoys her, while another shows no interest in enjoying her, for he feels satiated. Shvetashvatar Upanishad. This Upanishadic text involves a play on the word aja, female, aja, which means both goat and eternal being. The eternal female, material nature, replicates her three modes, goodness, white, passion, red, and ignorance, black, in the bodies of all life forms. One eternal male, the fallen jiva, tries to enjoy nature, while the other eternal male, the self-satisfied Supreme Lord, shows no interest in her. Sri Vishnu Purana also confirms that each of the four major constituents of material creation are eternal. Quote, I offer my obeisances to the unchanging, all-pure, eternal Supreme Soul, Lord Vishnu, the conqueror of all, who always appears in his same personal form. When the time for creation arises, he agitates material nature by his own choice. That same Lord Hari enters into inexhaustible nature, Pradhan, and expands himself as the inexhaustible creator, Purusha. The original state of nature, called Pradhan, is the undifferentiated ingredient cause of all creation. The best sages know her as Prakriti. Subtle and eternal, she comprises the elements of cause and effect. Almighty time has no beginning and no end, O learned Brahmana. Thus creation, maintenance, and annihilation continue forever without interruption. Time begins to act only after Lord Vishnu has impregnated nature by his glance, which includes the jivas, their karma, and time. In other words, the beginning of material creation lies outside the scope of material time. But even before this beginning, before the material creation is manifest, the jivas, nature and time, all eternal, are dormant within the transcendental body of Karna Dakshai Vishnu. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.22, time is also an energy of the Supreme Lord. So yava urvya varam ishvarishvara sukala shaktya shapanam chared bhuvi. Please assist the Lord of Lords for as long as he lives on the earth to relieve her of her burden by his own potency in the form of time. Among the four basic entities in material creation, Ishvar, Jiva, Maya, and Kala, the Supreme Controller, Ishvar, is the infinite living being. And the innumerable living entities, Jivas, are the infinitesimal living beings. The innumerable living entities are the infinitesimal living beings. Both Ishvar and Jiva eternally possess the quality of consciousness. Inert matter, Maya, is qualified by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Time, Kala, devoid of the three modes, produces the perception of change through the phases of past, present, and future. There also exists a fifth basic entity in material creation, namely karma, which is inert and beginningless but can have an end. The true nature of karma, the subtle law of cause and effect, is taught throughout the Shrutis and Smritis. As, for example, in the Vedanta Sutras, na karma vipagat iti chen nana ditvat. Opponent's view, one cannot reconcile the Supreme Lord's apparently preferential treatment of some living beings by appealing to the law of karma, because prior to the beginning of creation, nothing existed apart from him, not even karma. Thus, in the beginning, the jivas could not each have had separate individual karmas. Reply, no, karma has no beginning. Huh? And thus ends today's reading of the Sri Tattvasandarbha. Over the last few days, I don't know how many days we've been doing this, but maybe five or something like that.
6 days.
6 days. Time flies when you're reading Tattvasandarbha.
Is this the last day?
Today's the last day. I mean, it's the last day that I'll be here, but we have a few copies for sale if you want to keep going. And, yeah, we're going out to Govardhan.
Pancha kalpagupascha kripasanaveva patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Bodhi Vaishnavi ki jai, Shri Jiva Goswami ki jai, Shri Tattvasandarbha ki jai, Shri Kartik Vrat ki jai, Gopremanande Anibhava.
Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, hey! Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman.